Blog Talk Radio.
Reach the eye.
Pull up right there. You got it. Renegade. Why? Radio.
Peace and blessings. Boy, we're in a retrograde cycle. This is Queen Mother Imaku. And welcome to another edition of Renegade Wise Woman Radio here at the Main Street Universe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Boy, I'm going to tell you something. This week has been really something else. As I'm waiting for my correspondents to call in and also for the guests for tonight's show to call in. I'm hoping that everybody will call in because this cycle is, I'm telling you, everything that you could imagine that could go wrong. Well, I don't want to say it could go wrong. I want to say that you would imagine that would counter circumstances to seem like they're creating an impediment have happened, okay? But in spite of that, we persevere. The good thing is this is not happening while workmen are making changes on the basement of the house that I live in. You know, it's a wonderful thing, and my landlords, who are great people, have decided to go ahead and do some renovations in the basement. But, oh my, you can hear every little thing. But it's a blessing that that's not happening. It made today a little challenging to work, but, you know. And then also I attended a, oh, you get some folks? Okay. I attended a ceremony today. It just seems like I am just on the run all the time. Yet and still I had an emergency room visit earlier this week and then a gig and then another visit to the doctor yesterday, which has really inspired me to do a show on medical care today, because I'm going to tell you something. Visiting that office yesterday was abysmal. It was the worst experience. And I'm going to tell you, I've had a lot of experiences in going to doctor's offices. This was in the local clinic. Yes, Elizabeth, I am putting you on the carpet. I'm putting your business out there. Your clinic sucks, okay? And I had to ask for somebody to speak to about it because of the fact that it was just so bad. The doctor who was in there all of, 4 minutes, didn't even introduce herself to me and didn't listen to me, didn't even deal with what I was there for. You know, I started talking, she cut me off, barked some stuff at me, and then left. And then about 20 minutes later, she wandered past my door and then just said, she's bringing paperwork, throwing her arm up the hallway, you know, indicating somebody, and then that was it. And, we won't even talk about her personal hygiene issues. I was more than a little upset, and I think justifiably so. In fact, I ended up crying. I was so upset when the nurse came in to take my complaint, and she extended her hand to me and said, you know, I'm so-and-so. And I said, you know what, see what you did, that right there? I said, you've already given me more than the doctor gave me. I don't know who she is. She didn't introduce herself. You know, I mean, you know, so, yeah, we'll have to do a whole show on that. Welcome to my my co-host, Michette. You there?
I'm here. Hetupu, everyone. Hetupu. And Queen Mother, I'm so sorry you even had to go through all that.
Yes,
I was
going to
say, how are you? Yeah, I was going to say, how are you? But now I hear.
Well, I'm probably still a little high from the medication from yesterday. So, I mean, I didn't take any today who's going to be on the show. But anyway, and Sister Karen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Queen Mother. My goodness, I share in my disbelief in terms of all that you've been going through.
Right. Let me tell you, I was on the phone with Queen Mother Machiat because she was talking about hooking me up with an insurance plan, and I said, while I was in the office, I called and I said, listen, I can't take this. I need to deal with doctors who, you know, will take insurance, because clearly when you don't have insurance and you go to the clinic, you treat it like crap, okay? So, I mean, and the horrible thing is this. Let me just say that's how it is in Elizabeth. Yes, again, I'm calling my home city out. Okay. When I lived in Philadelphia, it wasn't that way. There was this wonderful, wonderful clinic where, I mean, people with money went to, because the care was just so good, and all you had to pay was $10 a visit. And I mean, they treated you like absolute royalty. I mean, it was such a good experience there that when I moved back to New Jersey, I asked if I could stay on there. You know, they could continue to be my doctors for a while, you know, as long as I get away with it, you know. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was one where people were treated with dignity. I told those people yesterday, I said, well, there's no dignity in this. You hear people down the hall, the dentist and other doctors talking about how wretched the place is.
Wow.
And talking about patients. I said, where's the professionalism in that? How am I supposed to feel secure about being here? I said, it was hard enough for me to come here in the first place, okay?
Yeah, no office decorum, huh?
None. No bedside manner, you know. I mean, at least the nurse, she was apologetic, and she really apologized over and over again. And so then she went over the different prescriptions, because this doctor didn't inject to me. It was just her writing off a bunch of stuff, and, you know. So, I mean, that made up for it, but it will take a miracle for me to go back there, okay? Because I said, you would think that you would be concerned with upholding people's dignity. Never mind the fact that I got there at 8:30 and wasn't seen until about, let me see, 1:30. Then they got some information.
Well, you were doing good. You were doing good.
I've
heard horror stories of people not getting seen until the evening.
Wait. Then I had to go back and sit down.
Oh, more? Oh, no.
Back in. They got my vitals. I had to go back and sit down, okay? And it was about 2:30 when Miss Doctor decided to mosey in and then quickly mosey out. And so, However, I got to tell you, listen, I was in the emergency room on Monday at a hospital in Newark. I'll spare them, because the first time I was there, it was a cool experience. This time, I don't know what was going on. But I was there 7 hours, So this is, it's kind of a standard thing. I was sitting there going, is it me? You know, and there was this other woman who was there. She got there about the same time that I did. In fact, she looked like she was in even more pain than I was in, and so I let her go ahead of me. And, then I went, it's in terms of, filling, giving the information and then going to sit down and waiting until your number is called. You know, they spare your dignity and not blasting your name all over the place so that your neighbors know, are you here? No. But we both were there 7 hours. This woman was crying, walking up and down the hall, trying to get a hold of the patient advocate. The patient advocate had left, although she was there during the time that we were there. Then she said she wanted to speak to the supervisor, and the supervisor said that he didn't want to talk to her.
Wow.
Modern medicine day. So how are the both of you? Let me talk about our guests. Now, I'm hoping that Louisa Teach will be calling back in. We ended up having a long conversation today, and then Mercury retrograde kicked in and the phone disconnected. And we never got around to affirming the time that she was going to be on. I've sent some emails. Facebook messages, text messages. Queen Mother Marcia Loya is a good friend of hers, and because of the fact that Louisa teaches an elder in her community and they do a lot of ceremonies together, sent her a message, and we'll see. For those of you who know the powerful and wise Louisa Teach, who wrote the book Jambalaya that made so many changes in our perspectives on reclaiming our African traditions, then you will get a treat if you hear from her tonight. And then also we have Jaleesa McEachin, who is a wonderful poet, actress. She has a new book out, Poetic Inner Me, and so we'll be hearing from her tonight as well. She's also a motivational speaker. So, but in the meantime, I wanted to also talk about Juneteenth because, you know, Juneteenth is officially now, and Sister Karen, you just wrote an article for daggone, I keep mixing brands. For Renegade, it's the meds. For Renegade Wise Woman magazine. So could you share a little with the audience that is not aware of what Juneteenth is about?
Oh, all right. Well, Juneteenth is a holiday that began in Galveston, Texas. The idea was that on June 19th in 1865, general from the Union Army rode in Galveston, and he read an order called General Orders Number 3 that declared that the formerly enslaved people were now free, and it also advised that they remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. So there was supposed to be this magical transformation from being slaves and masters to freedmen who were just going to quietly remain where they were, and their former masters were now going to start giving them money. But what I've always found interesting about the holiday is that technically the enslaved of all of those states that had seceded, they had already been granted their freedom through the Emancipation Proclamation. And erroneously, people believe that the Emancipation Proclamation somehow or another gave freedom to everyone. It only gave freedom to those that were in the states that had seceded, and it even carved out certain counties within those various states, like in Louisiana and Virginia, and the proclamation says itself, and which accepted parts are for the present left precisely as if this proclamation were not issued. So basically, the folks in Texas that were, you know, obviously in Texas when it had seceded, they had already been freed almost 2 years earlier, but Texas finally, you know, after the surrender of the remaining Confederate forces, I guess that was like the official end of the Civil War. And so Juneteenth came to be the representation of the final, I guess, hostilities ending. And they came to town and let the people know that now they were free.
Yeah.
Now,
you know,
I read something.
Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I read something very interesting that occurred this Juneteenth, and that is that the only African-American that sits on the Dallas County Commissioner's Court, he had written a resolution that was described as a Juneteenth resolution, right? And his name is John Wiley Price. He's the only black commissioner that sits on this court. And all the other commissioners, you know, voted on the document unanimously. And he even read the proclamation out loud. but for some reason they weren't really paying much attention. And so in the course of the writing of the resolution, he included a final sentence where he said, and I quote, "The United States of America is derelict in its promise of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness to the African-American people. Be it further resolved that the dereliction that has caused 400 years of significant suffering to the descendants of those who have been enslaved Africans who built this country should be satisfied with monetary and substantial reparations to same." The majority of those that signed on to this proclamation, they didn't hear that part or read that part, and the only Republican, he immediately distanced himself. His name was Mike Cantrell. He immediately changed his vote to an abstention. The others didn't change theirs, but they all insisted that it was just a resolution and it was only ceremonial, and indeed it had no political teeth in terms of any kind of structure for how you were going to come about, you know, doing anything to grant reparations. But this may be the first time ever that there's been some kind of resolution that's been passed in any body of a legal government that supposedly says that, oh, yeah, and reparations should be given to Africans. That got signed, I believe it was on the 18th. So I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
well, you know, this whole thing of the notion of reparations for us seems to be more than a little challenging. And, you know, I think that the country is afraid of going bankrupt, which it probably would. But, you know, it never seems to be an issue when it comes to others and how they have been wronged. And, you know, I think it's more than a little insulting, you know, it really is.
Uh-huh.
And
I agree. Well, John Conyers has been putting bringing up a resolution in the House of Representatives for years where he's just calling for a study of, you know, what occurred as a result of slavery in the United States to African Americans, and he can't ever get that thing out of committee. You know, no one will allow that even to come up. And I believe he has reparations within it, but it's a matter of, you know, let's discuss, you know, what the detrimental aspects of slavery and Jim Crow and all the things that occurred after. You know, let's talk about it. And they say, nah, we don't need to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. And so it's a problematic question. I think that I believe that there is very little interest in allowing a full discussion of the question of reparations or even, you know, what has occurred to the society at large and Africans as a result of slavery, because if you think about it, they already try to present history in a form that says, okay, you know, slavery really only existed almost for the 4 years that they had the Civil War. Prior to that, you know, it's like, okay, well, they don't really talk about that. So you get a full concentration of maybe 4 years worth of history about slavery, and then the Civil War comes, and okay, hallelujah, we all free. And it's the idea, you know, and the idea that we were enslaved. I mean, Africans were first brought here as slaves by the Spanish, I believe it was in 1455. So we're talking about a situation where there have been enslaved Africans on the continent, you know, at the point of so-called freedom for over 400 years. And so the idea that you had a society that had existed for over 100 years that had, you know, officially declared slavery as an instrument for the forming of the government in their constitution, where you could keep importing Africans all the way up until 1809, you know, and you could not stop importing them, you know, until 1809, if you chose. So the idea that, you know, they say, okay, we're going to build this country in 1776, and up until 1809, we're going to still need to bring some of them in here to keep building this thing. So, you know, we're going to make it in our Constitution say that, you know, you cannot stop importing Africans any earlier than 1809. You know, the whole question of discussing the inhumanity of slavery, the economic wealth, I often am kind of just astonished that I believe it was it's documentation that shows that in 1860, the majority of the world was receiving their cotton from the United States. And so we're talking about 75 to 85% of the cotton in the world was being supplied by the enslaved force. They were the ones picking the cotton, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about there's a whole lot of tangential sorts of topics and information that would obviously be more than relevant to that kind of discussion. And I believe that they, you know, obviously choose not to discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's what's interesting also to me, okay? Going back to the whole point of the proclamation and when it was strongly suggested that the newly free black folks stay there,
yeah.
And now they were employees. I mean, you wonder how many people actually got paid. You know, how many, you know. And then also saying that if you wander off, basically we're not responsible for what happens to you if you wander off. You know,
you're not allowed
to go to the military post. You know,
right.
You're not allowed to congregate mm-hmm. there. You know, basically if you decided to just strike out on your own and you were caught on the road, then, gee, guess what do you think happened? You know, I mean, more than likely got arrested and, right, going back into the new level of slavery that started with imprisoning people for little or no reason just
mm-hmm.
to create
on the chain gang. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. Also, on top of that, Juneteenth is something of a curious holiday, if you will. I mean, to me, I performed for and spoke at a Juneteenth celebration on Tuesday and am performing at one in Newark on Saturday. But there's still this lingering feeling of, what are we celebrating?
Right.
I mean, yes, it's a shame. You feel me, right? You feel me, right? I mean, it's
yes.
Just,
I feel you completely. That's always been my position on Juneteenth.
Right.
But, you know.
It's kind of like, so we're celebrating that we got the word late that we
yes,
were saying.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's just a little,
I had that. I thought that when I first learned about Juneteenth, and I would have been, I feel like it was college because they definitely didn't teach us about Juneteenth in the South in high school. So when I went to Tennessee State University and I took as many African American type philosophy history courses as I could, and that's when I learned what Juneteenth was. I thought it was just something that somebody said, like a date that would never show up. You know how some people just, you know, some people say umpteenth for, you know, an amount that doesn't exist or a huge amount. So I just thought it was a date that never would come, you know. So finally I realized, oh, that's what it is. And then the curiosity that Queen Mother mentioned came in, like, so why are we celebrating? Okay.
Yeah.
Thing holiday.
Well, tonight's throughout the show is on the preservation of African culture and why we need to be able to set the record straight through the arts, through columns, through storytelling, through pictures. I mean, just being able to just document and have a clear understanding, because sometimes people buy into the notion of, okay, we're just going to celebrate this, but then why? All right, just like there was a question that's posed by the Sandra Hayward of the Popcorn Kids, who was on our first show, she posted something asking, okay, if we have Juneteenth, then why do people celebrate July 4th? And she said, she said to me tonight that they really didn't get a whole lot of play. I said, probably because a lot of people were going,
Right.
In truth, there aren't many of us that really, well, people in conscious circles really don't do the 4th of July, unless it's a thing where it's like it's just an excuse for a family day, you know. But,
Well, that's the only reason we celebrate the majority of the holidays. We got a day off and we can get together, you know.
And you can get together, right. And then I have little ones, so they love the fireworks. So, you know, we'll go on out and look at the fireworks. But we will let them know that, because I won't say that I learned this exactly, but my instinct is that the fireworks are sort of a standing in the place of war. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of representing the bombs that blast and all of that during wartime. And that's just my personal opinion. That's kind of what it seems like because I'm like, well, it's the 4th and, you know, and I get Independence Day and everything. But, you know, we just seem so driven about guns and war and everything that just kind of reminds me of that. So I always feel a weirdness. Like I really love the beautiful lights of the fireworks, but I always wondered if it was sort of just standing in the place like beautiful war. You know, so I was like, maybe I should research that. But it's kind of it is a weird feeling.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Well,
and there's no such thing as beautiful war.
Right. Well, we'll be discussing more regarding the preservation of African culture and our traditions. But we're going to bring on our first guest soon. Incidentally, I just want to mention that, Rashette, you will be sharing information regarding homeschooling. And, tonight we're going to be talking about chores, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Appropriate chores for children, age appropriate.
Yes, that's a pet peeve of mine because there are too many kids who don't do chores. So I'll be really happy to delve into that a little later on. But in the meantime, for those of you who are listening who are wondering, hey, what happened to all the postings that you usually do for the show? Listen, I'm putting them up now. It's just been
I was wondering, too.
I know you're going, wait a minute. I know. Yeah. You're listening to Renegade Wise Woman Radio here on Main Street Universe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Please visit our website at www.renegadewisewoman.com. There you will see articles posted by Sister Karen regarding Juneteenth. You will also see the last two postings by Sachette regarding matters of family and homeschooling. And the more that we do for healing our families, the better. Okay, look at this. I'm trying to post this on Facebook here, and it's just sitting here staring at me. That's all right. Listen, I'm grateful that we have something of a connection. My computer's only crashed twice today. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Mine's been running a little slow. No crashes, but just a lot of clocking.
Yeah,
staring
okay,
at me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do things.
Very slow. See, I thought that it was because the area that I'm in. I mean, I'm near Newark Airport, and sometimes on overcast days especially, it can be a little challenging. I also know in the evening there are more people who are online, and I am doing Wi-Fi, you know. So at least I know it's not just me. Okay, so if you go to my Facebook page, you will be able to at least see a posting. I'm trying to tag. This thing is just... And you know the funny thing is I'm sitting here complaining about this computer, and 20 years ago... We didn't have laptops, you know. I mean, I can say that. Wait, how old was I when I got married? All right, I was 19.
Whoa!
My my
thought I was young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Y'all just get my book, The Cowrie Blessings book, New African Words of Wisdom, to get a better understanding about that. My first marriage, my second marriage, you know, I don't know if I'll end up talking about my third marriage in my next book, but I know that yesterday when the nurse was apologizing to me and then she was just going over things and she said, are you married, divorced? I said, divorced. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, no, don't be. I'm not. The only thing I miss about him is the insurance that I was on, okay? So, anyway.
Oh, that's terrible.
And listen, I know I'm not alone. I know there are plenty of folks out there who have gone through the same thing and feel the same way that I do. All right, I'm just keeping it real. It was great for 8 months until, right? Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But it was good for 8 months until she fell off the wagon, and after that, that was all she wrote. So, okay. All right, now I'm able to tag. Bring things to a serious note, though, in terms of talking about how we preserve our history through the arts. And I know a lot of artists step their pen and here come the text, you know, this running gag. Interrupt Queen Mother when she's on the air. A lot of artists pick up their pens or their paintbrushes to tell the story of Trayvon Martin. Our guest, Delisa McEachin, has a piece that is called No Justice, No Peace, and it is dedicated to Trayvon Martin. And so let's take a listen.
Young 17-year-old slain, shot dead in the street. All he had was some Skittles and a can of tea. America, I thought, was the land of the free. I guess not if you're young and black and wear a hoodie. No justice. She holds her head in her hands, tears stain her face. She won't eat or sleep the floor she faces. Eyes bloodshot red from sleepless nights until her young son gets just so continue to fight. We didn't have to know him to fight on his behalf. Something just isn't right. No DNA, all white jury. Daddy was a judge. You do the math. No justice. First black people went through slavery. Dealt with chains and whips. He admitted to shooting Trayvon. Not guilty verdict. Case dismissed. How are we supposed to cope knowing that because of skin color, we won't get a fair trial? But if another race was shot, we would be the first to go down. No peace. It's sad to know that this mother will never again see her son. His life was taken by the hands of a wannabe cop officer. And the same person who took his life will still walk the street. All Trayvon's mother has is a tombstone at 6 feet. No justice, no peace. Imagine if it was your son. What would you do? He was doing nothing but LWB, living wild black like me and you. No justice, no peace.
No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No, no justice. No, 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 no peace. No, no. No.
justice, no peace.
Mm-hmm.
McEachin. You know, my mind goes to so many things regarding that time period, because there were a lot of artists who were writing heartfelt sentiments about the situation. There were a number of folks who also exploited it. I remember, Sister Karen, I was telling you a couple years ago when the situation first happened that there was a brother who was he was in one of the subways, and you know, he had his little act going and everything, and then all of a sudden, dude flips up his hoodie, and then starts doing this hook about, you know, Trayvon.
Oh,
right?
I remember you telling me about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So everybody clamored to go and buy his stuff. I got the thing home, and the cut wasn't even on there, and it was just some really raunchy stuff that he was selling at that. And it really upset me. Let me welcome our first guest, Delisa McEachin, because I'd like to hear her views on, I'm sure you saw a great deal. You saw, I'm sure, heard a lot in terms of really wonderful art that was created, and probably some schlock just to be caught up in the notoriety and all that. But welcome, first of all, welcome to Renegade Wise Woman Radio.
Thank you.
Fine, thank you. So when you wrote that piece, what were you thinking? I mean, you know, what, seriously, you know, what was, because you're also a mom. And
yeah.
So tell me how the Trayvon situation hit you and how that translated over to your writing.
Well, I tell a lot of people that, you know, back in high school, seeing Rest in Peace t-shirts was normal to us. It was like another fashion statement in our closet. You know, it was nothing new. And I was just getting tired of all of the youth dying, especially our black men. You know, I'll be 26 years old, and by the time I reach 40 or 50, there won't be anyone left that's of my age. You know, and especially to watch what happened to Trayvon Martin and to see how the world was kind of separated into two, where you had some people that actually justified what happened to Trayvon Martin. You know, and he became a symbol of other African-American males that, you know, are, I call it disrespect, that they're disrespected every day, you know, and it's swept under the rug. So once this happened to Trayvon Martin, it seemed like a light was shed on this one situation that should have been shed on all situations. You know, it was just that one in something that just hit me the wrong way. And I felt like I had to express it. And the reason why I did not put the poem out the way that I did was because I felt like everyone was either trying to make money off of his murder or make a mockery of his murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Let me ask you about, you know, here's the thing I have to say, that I noticed a very definite, strong voice coming from your generation. The messages are really, really interesting in terms of really putting across your point of view. What would you say is the strongest or are the strongest messages that are coming through on the spoken word scene that you feel apply to your generation?
I believe that the strongest messages that are coming across are more so for my generation and the generations coming up to wake up. It seems like we're sleeping on a lot of things. It's like we pretend like we don't see the things that are going on in the world. And we choose to use the ignorance of the television or the ignorance of the music or the ignorance of what you see daily in your neighborhood to cover up the truth that's going on in the world. And basically what we're trying to tell the youth is, you have to wake up. Your eyes are open, but you're sleeping. It's like the youth they're letting things happen. Instead of being a part of the revolution, they're sitting back watching it on TV, eating popcorn, and you can't do that. If you want to change your way of life, if you want to make sure that your fellow brother or your fellow sister of your age is going to make it to retirement, you have to make sure that we're all on the right path, and you can't be out for self.
Mm-hmm. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself, because you grew up in Irvington?
Yes.
Okay. So what was it like for you growing up in Irvington?
Whew, okay. Well, when I grew up on, you know, a nice, quiet block. You know, the kids that were on this block, we all grew up together. That I grew up on was more of a family-oriented block. You know, we had the older woman that lived up the block where she would watch out the window. It seemed like it was the stories that our parents would tell us growing up. But then on the other side of town, you had kids growing up that only were able to sell drugs, did not eat, had to take care of their brothers and their sisters. You know, it was crazy. And then they every day you come to school and a fellow classmate has died the day before, or they're robbing each other. It's just crazy.
Now, just to give everybody a sense of perspective, Irvington is right next door to Newark.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so now, what does it do to you coming up with all this death that you're dealing with, you know? I mean, and how did that affect you as an artist?
Well, it makes you kind of desensitized to it. It's more so where you'll hear that someone has died, and the first thing you'll ask is, were they shot? Finding person says yes, then it's like, oh, okay, well, did they die? And if they say yes, then it's like, oh, okay. But then you hear someone has died from cancer, and you're like, oh, such and such died. And you're like, oh, how did they die? Oh, they died from cancer. You're more hurt to hear that someone died from cancer than someone died from being shot. And
really?
Yeah, and it's so sensitizing to the point where it does not affect me anymore. It's like you see stories every day of people being shot and killed, and it has no effect on me. And that's not what I want the generations coming up to feel. I have a daughter, and she's about to be 5. And I don't want her growing up in a world where killings are just another thing that happens every day. So I use my art to talk to kids. Glamour is great and all, you know, and that's what some people look for. But my thing is, these kids have to be put in place. You know, they have to get back to the way we were in the early 90s, where you run outside and you play, and it's not all about the internet. It's not all about shaking your behind. It's not, you know, make your life worth something. And I think that the problem that the kids have these days is they don't know their worth. They don't know that they can be great, because most of them don't know that they're going to live past 18.
Mm.
It's something that...
Go ahead, please.
No, it's just something that gets to you. They don't believe that they have a future. Yet when we were younger, we were taught to dream. We were taught to use our art for better. We were taught that we can be anything and everything that we want to be in life. And nowadays, the kids have to worry about walking down the street and making it back home.
Mm-hmm. So what compelled you to get into spoken word and write poetry?
Well, I've been writing poetry since I was 9 years old. I wrote my first poem with the help of my mom, and it was called The World. But what really made me dive deep into poetry was when I was in 10th grade. I had this whole self-esteem issue, and most people would look at a self-esteem issue as, oh, maybe she was bullied in school, you know, maybe she didn't have any friends. And it was the total opposite. I was cool with everyone in high school, from the so-called geeks, oh, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're this, you're that. but I was my own enemy. What other people would tell me that I looked like, I did not see in the mirror. And that was my biggest problem. So I was thinking about contemplating suicide. And I was serious. You know, I really was thinking of ways to just end it all because I felt like I was fat. I felt like I was ugly. I felt like I was dark-skinned. And I just looked at all of the aspects of everybody else, and I could not see that in myself. So I contemplated suicide. And one day the teacher, you know, he just decided to ask us, you know, who's ever thought about committing suicide? So I tell everybody, I said, I didn't raise my hand. Something raised my hand. So I raised my hand. You know, and I confess, like, yes, I did think about committing suicide. So I had to go through various counseling sessions and all of that. But when I picked up the pen, I realized instead of hurting myself, just display everything on paper. And maybe what I'm writing can help someone else. And I tell you, poetry has changed my life. And most people say poetry changed their life, but no, poetry has really changed my life. Had it not been for poetry, I honestly do not know where I would be today. I do not know what my confidence would be today.
And so when you share your poetry with audiences, what is that like for you?
It's like when I get on stage, it's like home. It's like therapy. It's like you... And it's funny because the nervousness that you get before you get on stage, it just helps deliver poetry so much better. And it's like a weight that is lifted off of you. No matter if you've done the same poem a million times, you always remember back to why you wrote it. And when you perform it, it comes out. And it's just beautiful. It's like art within art. Poetry is everything. It's everything. It's like the foundation to building a house. You start with that foundation of the words on the paper, and it can take you anywhere. And it's like, it's something that I can't really call it my art form. It's me. Like, poetry is a part of me, and I can't get rid of it. It's just within me.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, now I want you to tell me about your favorite poem. And then I want you to tell me about your experience as an actress and also about your new book.
Okay, my favorite poem. It's funny because out of all of the poetry that I've written, I would have to say my favorite poem is The World. Because that's a poem that, it means a lot to me. I wrote it with my mother. And through writing that poem at age 9, I found out that my mom used to be a poet. She used to write a lot, and then she just stopped. And with that first poem at 9 years old, it talks about how the world is supposed to get better and change, to love each other. You know, and we're supposed to live in this peaceful world, and, you know, everything is supposed to be okay. And it's funny because writing that with your mother, for me, my mom was a single mom, so she was everything, and she is everything to me. So writing that with the person that's supposed to make your life okay, she's like your shelter. She's supposed to be the one to make you feel comfortable and safe. And for my first piece of poetry to be about living in a world that's supposed to be comfortable and safe with the person that protects me was everything. So no matter what poem I write, no matter if I become famous off of a poem, that poem will always and forever be my favorite poem because the lady that sacrificed her life so that I could have a life and that my life would be protected, and she put down everything that she had to do to lift her children up, you know, and she made it possible for us to follow our dreams, even though she wasn't able to finish following her dreams. For her to sit there and we can express all of that on paper, but I see who sat there and helped me. That poem, The World, will always be my favorite. Always.
Okay.
And it's everything.
Will you share it? do you have a poem? You're listening to Renegade Wise Woman Radio here on Main Street Universe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Visit us at www.renegadewisewoman.com. If you can find a poem to share that you know you would love to give to our audience, it would be very great. And I should also mention that Jaleesa is also a member of Akiru Afrohemian Ensemble. She is an actress. And, yeah, we'll be starting rehearsals again this weekend. So, what do you have in your notebook that you want to share?
Let me check. You know what? I'll do, as much as I'd love to do the world, I don't have my poetry book with me, but I'll do another one that I've written for children. And basically, it's not a poem of, I call it, it's not a poem of roses. It's more so a poem of telling children to get your life together.
Okay.
So it's called The Children's Tale. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
A Children's Tale. Man, oh man, look at that little girl with her hip in her hand. Acting like a bad attitude is in demand, like the habit she's grown up with and up and ran, huh? Look at little dude with his pants in a sag. No need to groom his hair because he wear do-rag. School work, please. He don't give it a chance, but he can tell you front and back about a crip walk dance. Wasting away. You don't know about the great people who die each day, so you can live in harmony and pave the way. Young ones really better listen to the things you say. But nowadays, one word could send you to your grave. Shattered dreams, because young girls lose their self-esteem and end up naked on the cover of a magazine. Young dudes end up selling drugs and sin to a dude who don't care about him, but he worships the kingpin. Wake up, young brother, because the curtain is closing. While slain and shot up bodies are decomposing, young girls disappearing without no one knowing, and the dude who said he loved you got you tricking and hoeing. Girl, please straighten up before you catch a disease. Dude really care about you, but you stay on your knees. I know when you get older, you want riches and wealth, but straighten up, young ones, before you're by yourself. Children.
Snapping over here.
Snapping too.
Yeah.
To my good co-host, message. Do you have any questions for our guest?
No, I said that's a good message. That's something that should be taken to heart by a lot of young folks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
For doing the poem, I actually remembered the poem that me and my mom did, which is weird. It's a little weird.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you want to share it?
Sure. The world.
Okay.
Sometimes I sit in my room and wonder what tomorrow may bring. A good day, a bad day, or a day of wonderful things. There are so many things going on in the world today. It gets sometimes scary wondering if my future is okay. My mother tells me one day the world will get better and change and get along with each other and not find it strange. She tells me to remain positive and always look ahead. And when things seem to be going wrong, I remember what she said. Yeah, so it was a little short one, but it was one that means a lot to me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's nice. Beautiful. Yeah.
Tell us about your book.
Very nice.
Okay, so the book is called Poetic Inner Me, and it took 16 years to write this book. And what it is a compilation of all of the poems that I've written up until age. And it takes you on a journey from 9 to about 18. And basically, I named it Poetic Inner Me because poetry comes from your inner you. But in the end, you can also be your own enemy. So it's your poetic inner me or your poetic enemy. You have to choose which side. So it's, and the book, you know, it's fairly new. It's been out for about a year. I'm still pushing the book, but, you know, it's fuel to write more. Because as I flip through the pages and reminisce on why I wrote this book, it just gives me fire to write more. know, I really, really do love this book. And, you know, it's like that first chapter in my life. It's that secret, that box that, you know, will forever hold all of the trials and tribulations of my life. So when I closed that chapter, it was time to start a new one. But for that book is all of the emotion in everything from age 9 all the way up until adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Did your daughter write?
She tries. She's four. She says, "My mommy is a poetry." I said, "I'm what?" "My mommy is a poetry."
So cute.
I said, I found out that she wanted to do art when I wrote the Trayvon Martin poem. Because while I was practicing it in the house, she came to me and she said, "Mommy, I have a poetry for you." So I said, "Okay." I said, "Go ahead, Jalen." She said, "Something, something, 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 no justice. Something, 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 no." And for me, that just, yeah, it was just like, it taught me two things. One, she listens very well.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the spirit of an artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little scary because it's like, my daughter loves to dance. She loves to sing. She loves to act. And, I mean, she's good. She knows how to change her voice. And at 4, she can change her voice and turn into a different character.
That's beautiful. Okay, so before you leave us, please tell us about you being a motivational speaker and what inspires you to become a motivational speaker.
Okay. The first time that I actually spoke in front of a group of people was the kickoff breakfast for a celebrity read in North. So I went to the Gateway Center, and I thought that I was just going to get up there and say a few words. I actually got up there, and I was up there for like a half an hour, and I was talking to the audience. And I said, you know what, this is something that I like. I was geared more towards talking to children, so I joined the Popcorn Kids, which, as Queen Mother said, Sandra Hayward, she actually runs that program, and it's a phenomenal program.
Yes.
And I get the chance to talk to children and tell children that, you know, whatever you're going through right now, it's not going to last always. You know, prepare yourself so you can go to college, you know, high school, and, you know, just know that whatever situation that you're going through right now, you're going to grow up and you're going to forget about it. You know, and that's the main thing. Like, with what I do, the youth comes first. So when I go out and I do motivational speaking, I just want to change the mindset of the youth. Let them know that life is not that serious. You know, let the guys know and the young men know that if you get into a fight, a fist fight, whatever kind of fight, you can live another day. You can walk away. You don't have to come back and shoot that person. You know, you don't have to pull out guns. You don't need weapons. You will live.
Mm-hmm.
You will get over it. Young ladies, let them know that right now it's not the time to have children. You need to focus on what you need to do. You know, like, things will come. I just want kids to realize that you can slow your life down. You don't have to be so fast. 25 will get there. 50 will get there. 75 will get there. You just have to slow down and enjoy the life that you have. And I believe that that's the reason why there are so many fatalities when it comes to young people, because we want to live this fast life because we're in our heads, we're not promised tomorrow. Nobody's promised tomorrow. You can walk outside and get hit by a bus. You're still not promised tomorrow. So live your life while you can. Slow down. Slow down. You're moving fast, but your clock still ticks just like mine do.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. And that's the main thing that I just want to teach children. Like, you don't have to be so fast. You don't have to move so fast. Live, just slow down.
I totally agree. I say that all the time. All the time.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's really important thing, what you're saying, Tasha, you know, the fact that it is something you share all the time. And I think that's wise. In fact, that's something my father said to me after he had a really serious health issue. And after he rebounded from it, he said, I am stopping to smell the roses. And he said, baby, you got to take the time to stop and smell the roses, you know. So you can't be so busy all the time. That's true. That's the truth.
You don't want to see roses when you're dead. You want roses when you're living. And that's what people don't understand. Like, you know, live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing that really impressed me that Jaleesa has said was when she was talking about it, when you're young and things are just really terrible and you feel like, because I've been that way. I was bullied when you were saying, like, you know, self-esteem issues and wasn't necessarily a bully situation. I was bullied. I'm brown. I'm very brown, and maybe not as brown as I used to be because I'm not out in the sun as much, but I ran track, so it was pretty dark. I'm very skinny. And that was not cool. So I was often picked on about being skinny or being dark. So there were times where I thought, you know, well, what if I just wasn't here? Would anyone even care? Or what if I wasn't here? That would make them pay, you know, those kinds of things. But somehow I was strong enough to never really even, you know, really try it. I guess I was just, you know, maybe too chicken to even actually think seriously about suicide. But, you know, I remember contemplating it, and I remember getting older and thinking, yeah, if I had just stopped back then when things were really terrible and people were picking on me and everything, I wouldn't have known the life that I have right now, and I'm very happy. I mean, I got struggles like everybody, but those people are you know, they're still around, and they see me now every once in a while, and they don't think anything about that bullying stuff. They don't think anything about what they said or anything. Some of them forget, you know, altogether. So it wasn't even that important to them. It shouldn't have been that important to me, you know, to want to even take my life. So I think that's very important, what you're saying, Jaleesa, is so true, because I got caught up in that too. Like, man, this is terrible, but I made it through it, so... That's such an important message.
Yes, indeed. You know, be able to say you made it on the other side, and it inspires others. It truly does inspire others.
It does.
One other thing I would like for you to just share, because of the fact that you just graduated from Essex County College. So can you just leave a few words regarding education, its role in your life, and any words of wisdom you would give to somebody who is looking to finish getting their education?
Yes. First of all, I just want to say college is fun. I think that's one of the things that helped me get through college. And I don't mean fun as in parties, you know, and things like that. You build in college. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of people go with the notion that college is not for everyone. But you cannot say college is not for everyone or high school is not for everyone if you did not try. You know, I went to Essex County College, and the reason why I graduated in 2 years exactly is because I had an advisor, and my advisor, Dr. Davis, pushed us. She pushed us hard because she wanted us to succeed. And the thing with college is you can make mistakes, but you can do it over. And there's no such thing as too old, no such thing as too dumb. None of that. They have tutors. They have people that will be in the classroom the same age as you. You know, you're never in college, you're never alone. There's always someone there to help you. No matter what aspect of college you're in, there's always someone there to help you, to motivate you, to push you. For my degree was the best feeling ever. And it made it even more of a good feeling because I was sitting right next to my little sister. And we graduated, her with education, me with criminal justice. But to see the look on our mom's face when we turned around and lift our degree jacket, and to see the look on her face, you know, because my mom didn't finish high school. She got to the 12th grade. But I promised her that I would finish high school. And that's all that she wanted. But me and my sister, we felt like we had to go further than that. Now in a world where everything is about competition and everything is becoming devalued, like a high school diploma is now the equivalent of an 8th grade degree.
Mm-hmm.
A college associate's degree is the equivalent of a high school diploma. So you mm-hmm. have to push yourself. You have to. There's no choice. And for kids that want to give up and don't want to finish school, I'm telling you, the best feeling that you can have is when you walk across the stage knowing that because of yourself, you did it. No matter how much motivation you get, much push you get, and how many people's hands are on your back, you did it. You sat in the classroom every day to do what you had to do. And when you walk across the stage and you put on that cap and gown, the feeling is indescribable. Kids need to know that education is important and you can have fun while doing it. Don't look at school as work. Look at it more so as play and building on your future friends and building on your future career. It's the best feeling in the world.
Hmm. Yeah. I had the same experience as well. I went back to college after like a first try, then I returned in my 30s. So I'm a tad bit older. But I found the same thing that was fun. I realized that I was smarter than I thought I was. And I just had a blast, and I did. I did build with people. I met people. Yeah, it was fun. So now I have a totally different perspective. At first, college did seem like, ugh, because I didn't wait after high school. I went straight in. And I think I would say with some people would be good to take a break. For some people, that's my opinion, because I didn't do so good. I was burnt out going straight from high school right in. But that was just me. But later when I went back, I really appreciated it.
Yeah, and it's like the key to it is that you went back. You know,
yeah.
and that's the good thing about college is you can go whenever you feel like it. And
mm-hmm.
you make your own schedule. You work at your own pace. And you can just get it done. But most people think that when they leave, oh, I can't go back, I'm too old. When I graduated, and this is one of the things that I really had to open my eyes and look at. For my graduation, a blind man walked across the stage. An 80-something-year-old mm-hmm. lady walked across the stage. A crippled mm-hmm. girl walked across the stage. A guy in a wheelchair reeled across the stage. So you mean to tell me that I cannot walk across the stage at whatever age, at whatever disability, at whatever point in my life? Yes, I can, and I will, and I did. And that's what a lot of youth coming up and a lot of people that just think that they can't do it, look at situations like that. If you think you can't go back to school, throw out any excuse in the book, and there will be someone that will prove you wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right. Okay, so if you can please give your contact information for our audience.
Yes.
That's the best way I can reach. And I should also mention that the link for your book is on the Blog Talk Radio page on the description there. That will be added to the Renegade Wise Woman page for the radio show. But please, how can people best get in touch with you for speaking engagements, for performances?
Find me on Facebook at Jaleesa McEachin. You can find me on Instagram at @that_poet_bad. You can find me on SoundCloud at Jaleesa McEachin. And my email is Jaleesa_McEachin@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, certainly enjoyed having you, and hope you'll be able
Thanks.
To come back with us. And
yes.
I think we're going to start adding a little guest co-host format to this in the future. I think that'd be pretty cool if you come back and join us with our panel to interview some folks. How about that? Great. Okay. All right. Well, again, you have just heard from Jaleesa McEachin, who is a wonderfully talented and inspiring young lady. And I hope that you all, I'm sure you all enjoyed her. Please check out her book and her SoundCloud page, her fan page on Facebook. And my goodness, I just love social media. So many ways. If nothing else, you can go to my Facebook page and find her name there. And also, she's included in my likes. She has her fan page there. But I should also give a shout-out to Southern Zichette, because her fan page is up, as well as Soil Edwards. In fact, Soil, are you there? I saw her number up a little while ago. And again,
I'm here.
Got this Mercury. Oh, there you are. Okay. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, my apologies. I think I hit something.
Okay.
I had a bit of trouble with my line.
Oh, well, yes, I got a text from Sister Karen saying the line was bad. She's calling back in.
Yeah.
I am, I still have not heard from Louisa Teach. I'm guessing it's going to have to be rescheduled unless she finds the messages late and then she tries to call back in. But in the meantime, we do have an awful lot to cover in terms of this topic that we have with dealing with the preservation of our culture and telling our own stories, and also when it comes to rearing our children. So, Zichette, can you please share some information from the article that you have posted on Renegade Wise Woman magazine?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I am covering this week age-appropriate chores for children. And the reason why the subject came up, actually, I have a two-year-old, and I was kind of curious as to what she supposedly is able to do chore-wise, as far as, I guess, the authorities, not authorities, like it's police, but, you know, as far as the wise ones say, those who work with children and things like that, different organizations. So I actually was perusing. There's a website, NACD.org. It's the National, I believe, Academy of Children's Development. At any rate, I saw that source and another one. So here's what I deduced from the things that I read. Children can begin their chores as early as 2, which is what I suspected. And they might feel like having chores is drudgery, but after a while they'll come to realize that it's a part of the family. It's making them necessary and making them feel part of that unit. And feeling important and part of a family unit, is very necessary for a child's self-esteem. And so in addition to building the self-esteem because they know that they're a team player and they're doing something important, they learn responsibility and independence. You can keep your children on task with daily charts, like 2 different charts. You can do a daily chart and a weekly chart for chores if you so choose. That's just a suggestion. But here are a few chores by age that can be handled. Ages 2 to 3. They can pick up and put away toys in the toy bin. They can put dirty clothes in the hamper. They can pick up and put away bath toys. They can assist in making the bed, like putting their little stuffed animals on and stuff after you've made it. They can carry a step stool that they may need to brush their teeth and things in the bathroom. And they can wipe up small spills. Ages 4 to 5, they can sweep with a small broom, little kitty broom, or maybe one of those whisk brooms. They can empty the waste paper bin. I say waste paper, not trash exactly, just, you know, a small bin on the side of your desk or something of that nature. They can sort laundry and fold small items. They can water flowers and pull up weeds if you have a garden. They can also wash the plastic dishes that you may have and even fix themselves a bowl of cereal. And that was ages 4 to 5. Ages 6 to 7, they should be able to set up and help clear the table, unload and sort utensils from the dishwasher, help make or pack lunch, help make and pack lunch, actually. They should be able to vacuum, make your bed and change the bed. They should be able to keep their room relatively tidy, feed pets. And I'm sure with feeding pets, you would still need a little assistance with parents, but they should be able to do that.
Yeah, before you give the dog or the cat the whole bag of food.
Exactly. Yes, you know, you want to give them proportion sizes. And they should also be able to read stories and play with their younger siblings. That was ages 6 to 7. Ages 7 to 8, quickly, they should be able to hang up clothes, make his or her own snacks, load and unload the dishwasher, help with shopping lists and carry in and put away groceries, and help the younger siblings complete their chores. And then finally, I rounded it up with ages 10 plus. And they should be able to use the washer and dryer to mop, to put away all items, not just toys, to sweep inside and outside, like sweep the porch, sweep living room, kitchen, and cook simple meals with adult supervision, and clean the kitchen and the bathroom. And some things to remember when doing this, don't expect perfection, and also don't redo or complete the work for them. But don't expect it to be perfect, because they're, especially when they're younger, they're just learning. For the younger ones, give a brief demonstration, or at least portion sizes, like we were talking about with the pets. Encourage your children. Always encourage them. So even if it's kind of a hot mess, just, oh, that's good, you know. I mean, not for the 10-year-olds, but for the younger ones. For the little ones. And then remember, by age 10, they should be able to complete all of these things on the list. So as they go, as they get older, you kind of just stack those on. So it's not like they can only do the things I'm listing, but it kind of is a continuing list. So by the time they're 10, they should be able to do all of this. And then also, finally, remember that children are not being responsible if you are still prompting them. They're not independent or responsible if you still have to prompt them by saying, have you done this, or will you do this, or whatever. So the point of this is to achieve the independence that they know, this is what I have to do each day. And, you know, maybe you'll still do your list on the refrigerator or something, but at some point they should know. And that's what I'm working with. I have a 10-year-old, so I'm working with her right now. Like, you know, you should be able to get up. She gets her own breakfast. It's quickie pancakes and stuff like that, but that's where I'm working on both ends, the 2-year-old and the 10-year-old. We're getting these chores together. So and that's why I ended up researching that. So that's what I have, Queen Mother.
Well, that's great. I think that's a really wonderful compliment.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, Sister Karen, I know that you and I, having been a little further down the road and being longer in the tooth, have had our
experience. Yeah, a little bit longer. Yeah.
A little longer, yeah. I've had our experience with raising our children and having them do chores, and certainly was considered an extremely important component, especially found that it was a huge cultural piece. And I say that because of this. My children, they're both in accelerated classes, and my older daughter in high school one day came home and she said, why do we have to do chores? The rest of my friends don't have to do chores. Their mothers do everything for them. They make beds. They do the laundry, wash the dishes, they do everything in the house for them. And I said, well, that's them. That is not our culture. Our culture, everybody pitches in because you live in this house. And on top of that, once you get to college, you will thank me because you will find that you'll be able to handle real-world stuff. You know, you'll be able to be responsible for yourself. And surely enough, by the time my older daughter got to college, and she went to NYU, and she was there with all these kids with money, and who were outside of the culture, and who didn't have a clue as to how to even boil an egg, how to clean up after themselves. And any time that my mother was going to visit her to drop off some money, she had to go and hide all their liquor bottles and stuff that were laying around, all the other things, you know. And she said that the girls were really amazed because of the fact that she knew how to do laundry and she knew how to cook her own food. So I got the phone call one day saying, Mommy, thank you. You know?
Oh, well, that's
exactly.
Nice.
But, you know, here's the other side. I dated this brother who had his barely 5-year-old child making breakfast for him, right? The first time I saw it, I was absolutely appalled. You know, she got her little chair. No, actually, it was a big, she got the chair from the kitchen table. and she's there cracking eggs and scrambled eggs.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and then then she crawled up onto the counter to make some toast, and you know, I looked over at her. I went in to say to him, why are you letting her cook? He was like, she's all right. And I went back in there. She's on the counter with a fork, poking it in the toaster, trying to get the toaster. Oh, my Lord.
No.
Oh,
no.
Forked the towel and the child off the counter. Oh, my goodness. That's
See, that's, the brother needed the age-appropriate list is what.
Yes, he did. He definitely needed that list. But you know, I think he also needed he needed the common sense list. Who in the world would send a 5-year-old to be cooking on her own by herself?
That's
common sense. I mean,
but you know, there are a lot of parents that I end up counseling today and asking, do you give your children chores? And the answer 9 times out of 10 is no. How did we get here?
I have no idea. I know that my 10-year-old, she tends to kind of wonder why she's got chores, but I feel that her friends as well, she has maybe one friend that probably doesn't have chores, but I think that most of her friends do. But it's something that I felt like I had to make myself do because I am a stay-at-home mom, and I'm working from home, and we're homeschooling, home. And I noticed that I was just in the habit of doing everything for her. It just had become habit. And I looked up, and she was about 5. That's when I started being like, wait, no. And that's about when I had her do the plastic dishes and stuff. And the, it's like I had to wake myself up and say, wait, stop doing that. But what's funny is even the children, at, when they go to college, I have a friend who works in admissions at a university, and they have no idea how to fill out their own financial aid. They'll say, my mother does this for me.
Yeah.
So they're in there with their blank forms and wanting someone to help them because their mother's not there.
But mommy's not there,
Yeah, so maybe some of the mothers just need to wake up a bit. Sometimes you have to remind yourself, I got to cut the strings, and these children are growing up. You know, they're going to end up lame in society if I don't teach them. Like my mother said, you know, they get to college. Now she knows how to do her laundry and cook for herself.
Right, yeah.
I have no idea how we got here.
I don't either. I had run into a similar situation with my girls as well. You know, stories about, well, my friends don't have to do this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, my response was kind of like, and do they live here? You know?
Right.
So if they don't live here, you know, that's what we do here where we live, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I think it's kind of amazing. You're thinking to yourself, well, how did that happen? Because you remember, like Queen Mother says, she and I are a little longer in the tooth. And, you know, a chore, I mean, everybody knew you had chores. That was just without saying, you know. And
They talked about your parents, your whole family, if you didn't do chores.
That's right.
It was shameful if you didn't do chores. You were labeled as lazy, you know.
You were lazy,
But I got to tell you, I believe that another reason that, so many of our parents have gotten away, or our contemporary parents have gotten away from giving chores to their children is because of the whole notion of trying to be more liberal and free as a parent, and, you know, or kind of on one level sort of rebelling. Now, well, actually, you know what, this kind of goes back. This goes back to when Sister Karen and I were coming up, okay, during the 60s and 70s. They could be,
stop saying that like we were back in the Stone Age.
And I say this because the whole idea was not being like your parents. And so
some of us
took it to the extreme. Look, I did a little bit of that. Well, my mother did this, and so I'm not doing that. I mean, I was still I was front-handed, but my children had the whole third floor to themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I had read in one of those women's magazines, either Family Circle or Women's Day, like not to get down on them if they didn't keep their rooms perfectly clean, just close the door.
Just close.
You know? And I would warn them if I had to go up there, because the attic was up there, I would give them fair warning. Okay, I can get up there today, you know. So I give them a certain amount of time. And sometimes they, Mommy, it's another hour, you know. With that, I was a little too lenient, you know. I mean, I made sure that at least, look, because when they got into their preteen years, that's when things started getting crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I made sure that they had to clean up everything at least once a week. But
right.
I still think that with that, I was a little too free. But with other things, I had more, I was more stringent than other parents were. And that the interesting thing was that they still stuck to the routine that I gave them from when they were in preschool. After coming home, they'd have snacks, tell me about their day, and then do their chores, and then they could play. So, you know, or as they got older, then, you know, they could do whatever, you know, leisure stuff or whatever. But that was the routine all the way through high school. They knew that they had their chores to do. So, you know, and I hope that served in good stead. But I think that it has been a whole thing about rebelling against, you know, our parents' generation. Because, you know, this is like the way you're asserting yourself in the world, okay? So now we've got, for folks who've gone way the other way, we've got all these brats out here.
All these
children who are seeking stronger guidelines. Now, I must tell you, the brother who I dated and who I end up being engaged with, listen, for y'all who have not listened to me before, the radio show ends up becoming like my reality show, okay? So you end up finding about all different aspects of my life, including my love life, for better or worse. We ended up becoming engaged, and that meant that I took on the role of surrogate mommy, all right? And, you know, because on the one hand, here she's cooking. But on the other hand, she didn't do anything else. So she was really excited about my giving her a chore chart. I mean, this kid was so happy, you know?
Yeah, and they do get excited when you do that.
To her, it meant that I cared.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, I was going to – go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking on the matter of how we got here. It occurred to me, in addition to what you all are saying, that some of the parents are working most of the day, and they may get their children as late as like 8 or 9 o'clock. Now the child is tired.
That's another problem.
It's like the child has been out of the house all day. Either at school or with the caregiver, at the daycare and that kind of thing. So home is just where they crash and go to sleep, and then they get up and leave immediately the next morning.
That's a key factor. You're exactly right, sister. That's a key factor. Yeah.
So perhaps you can share with us some information about how to set up structure in your home, even if you are a working parent with a child that's in aftercare late, what can be done to create a cohesive sense of family and home, so that home is not just a place to flop in. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
All right, I will do that.
Thank you. Well done. Love the article.
I was going to add my two cents. I was going to say I think my liberalism went the way of deciding that I would do away with the old adage, you know, children should be seen and not heard. So, you know, if my children had an objection to something that I had said or, you know, something that we were going to do, I allowed them the opportunity to express, you know, what their issue was, et cetera. Unfortunately, that did not mean that I was going to rescind whatever I had said we were going to do. And so I've raised quite great debaters in the family because they've always felt that if they could express themselves well enough and be eloquent enough, that would mean that I would change my mind.
my daughter is just like that.
Really?
Oh, mm-hmm.
And but you know, I Sister Shad, I believe she's really got her finger on it, though. The idea that so much time is spent out of the home nowadays, most of us mothers, you know, we aren't able to be at home and, you know, be the stay-at-home mom. And has caused a whole variety of... I was relaying the story of my cousin the other day. You know how you get 2 seconds after you have your baby before you got to go back to work? And,
I know.
So the baby had, I think she may have been able to stay out a month. I'm not sure. But anyway, she went right back to work. And, of course, the baby at that point is going to the babysitter and then daycare. And it was to the point where when the child got, you know, old enough and was speaking, she was calling the caregiver mommy, and which was, you know, heartbreaking to my cousin. And but, you know, that was the tendency of all the kids there, you know, to call her mommy. And so that, you know, it turned into a bit of a let's try to explain to the child, no, this is not mom, this is, you know. And that therein lies, you know, I think the heart of the problem, the fact that for all intent and purposes now, most of the time, everybody in the house is out working, including the kid as soon as he's old enough to be able to get a job. So,
you know,
it's tearing apart the family, something awful, you know. You're lucky if everybody can have the same work schedule to sit down and have that meal where everyone, you know, interacts with everyone, you know.
Mm-hmm. But, that's so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that the way to best tackle that, in my humble opinion, is to go out of your way to create family time. You know, I mean, in today's world where everybody is trying to get that dollar, and certainly with the economy being the way it is, it makes it challenging, and it almost seems like it's designed to tear the family up, you know? Well, no, that's exactly what it seems like. But just like with any relationship where, you know, you may be working night shift and, you know, your partner may be working day shift, you find time. You make it happen somehow so that way you don't lose that that bond. So, again, look forward to hearing more about what you'll have to share with us next week, Bichette. Sister Soil. Yes. Sister Soil.
Yes.
There you are. You've been waiting so patiently during this whole show. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. What wisdom do you have to bring to us from the Holistic Tip?
Well, I guess I wanted to talk about a little bit about spiritual baths, about how, since I was still talking about detoxing, about how the spiritual baths detox you. To my surprise, when I talk about it, a lot of people don't really know what it is, and that's kind of shocking to me. But adding the right minerals and herbs and oils, even crystals and stones, will pull the toxins out of your body, as well as, you know, fasting and juicing and things like that. It heals you on the medical level as well as the metaphysical level, clears your mind, gives you a sense of clarity. Things that should be used are lemon. I use salt sometimes because some baths require that you do salt because you have different baths. You can do that baths for protection. I've been doing a lot of those baths lately. You add herbs. depending on what you want. You can ask rosemary or ruda. Or what was that you had suggested that I got, Queen Mother?
For spiritual bath?
Yeah.
Mugwort.
That's very good. That's very good. I just wanted to just touch on that, just the importance of spiritual baths and, you know, just pampering yourself as you do these cleanses and doing them more than just one day. I think we all need to go back to the water. Too many of us don't take any baths. There's a therapy called bonio therapy, and it's a form of therapy that they use in spas that cure for diseases. They do it through bathing or hydrotherapy, and I think that's pretty cool, and that's something that they did back in the Kemet days. I had found out a little bit of research on that, and that's interesting. I think we should get back into the water and temper ourselves and heal ourselves at the same time.
I agree. I mean,
we are people
of the water. I mean, black folks, we come under the sign of Pisces, truly. And, I mean, really, that's our astrological attribution. And Pisces, I can speak as a Pisces, we don't break. Well, if you push us, we can really break. But, you know, we're very pliant. That has helped us survive as a people in the utmost circumstances. And, you know, you notice that when you get in the water, like taking a bath or taking a shower, that it's just it's so, so soothing, so relaxing. And also you'll find that you have a deeper communication with your ancestors at that time.
Yes.
Just
I
like,
try to
know,
put my daughter in there, and she jumps out because she says she feels things in the water. I'm like, you can't be scared because those are our ancestors. It's like they stir the water, and I think that's even extra cool.
Yes, it is. I do my prayers. I after I bathe, I do my morning prayers in the shower, and because in the communication level. And so, I mean, I have a whole layer of prayers that I do in the shower, and then after I get out of the shower and get dressed, I have other prayers that I do. But my initial prayers for the day happen in the shower. And I think that it's really on point. No, I know it's really on point that you're bringing this up, Sister Soil, because of the fact that we are going into the solstice. The summer solstice is Saturday. And it's very typical for many folks to do a cleansing throughout the summer, whether it's for a few days or a week. In many of our Kemetic traditions, including in our house of worship at Akeru, we do a 42-day cleanse. I always advise people to listen to what their bodies tell them, the gem and kat. Listen to the body, listen to the gut, listen to the intuition, because you want to be sensible about it. Doing spiritual baths during that time, I think, is of utmost importance. And it's also a good thing to journal during your time of cleansing, so you can really process what you think, what you feel, what your goals are, and praying for clarity in how to achieve those goals. Some folks might wonder why 42 days. Well, we do 42 days because of one day for each of the 42 oracles of light. And, you know, you meditate each day. You know, the whole thing is about cleansing your body, mind, and spirit. And I used to stress wearing sacred whites. That was the tradition that was handed down to me. Being something of an African Kemetic hippie temple, there's a keep it real. I'm not going to stress that this year. You know, I think doing things like spiritual baths and taking time to meditate on each principle every single day, and really focusing on how you want to bring in more positivity. You know, Sister Soil, you were talking about positivity last week. This is an excellent time to focus on that. I think that that's much more important than wearing the whites every day. Although wearing the whites, I mean, don't get me wrong, it has a purpose. You know, they're called seshpet in the Hermetic tradition, your sacred whites, it gets you to focus on the fact that you are pure in body, mind, and spirit. And, you know, when you're wearing white clothes all the time, you've got to take a little more extra care in how you conduct yourself. Last summer, it was a chore riding my bike and wearing my sacred white. But I'm gonna forego it this year, because truthfully, I've seen so many folks walking around in sacred whites for 42 days, and who were just as evil at the end of the cycle. You know, I mean, they look real cool though, walking around the whites, and people are thinking that they're really holy and sacred, and then you come to find out that they're really their personalities are really just scummy, you know. So doing things like a spiritual bath gets you to really hone in on who you do. You have any other traditions that you do that really helps you to come to a place of peace and renewal?
Well, really, Queen Mother, basically, well, that is that I do that, and I always go to the park and I reconnect myself back to Mother Earth. I replant my feet back into the dirt. When you replant your feet back into the dirt and you pay attention to your veins in your feet and in your arms, you can see the reconnection back with Mother Earth. You have to spend time with Mother Nature. You know, forget everything that's going around with the job, the kids, and everything, and just chill with her. And I do that and the spiritual baths regularly, because once you stop doing them, you really won't feel. You won't feel no kind of spiritual movement. So you're right, it has to be something that's done on a regular basis, especially when you want to deal with protecting yourself.
Sister Soil, I have to tell you that that is so true, because I've just been taking quickie showers, and I haven't had I have my most spiritual moments. I share that with Queen Mother in the bath. And usually I would do a sea salt and baking soda cleanse. And I would have the most wonderful connection to, you know, the spirit world. And I could feel stuff in the water. And, I mean, things were progressing and everything. And then I done got busy. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking these quickie baths. And I just, like, I messed up and hadn't even done my prayers some days. You know, I was like, what is going on?
Well, look, next time you take a quickie bath, just make up a quickie prayer.
Yeah, just make up a quickie prayer, right.
If I'm like, water, baby. So don't feel guilty, but you're going to have to force yourself to get back into the water.
Yeah, I know. And you're right. And I was just like, I got to just say that, because I was thinking it today. I was like, I need to get back into my soaks, you know. Yes. And for some reason for me, the sea salt and baking soda, which I realized that this is very much like what they did in Kemet, I was just like, oh, you know, the natron. I was like, oh, that's what that is. And I just felt it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome.
Right,
it's awesome. So I'll probably be jumping right in the bath as soon as we finish the show.
You won't be the only one.
Sister Karen, you came up in the Muslim tradition. So, I mean, what holds true for you?
Regarding what in particular? I'm
just
not quite sure I understand the question.
Centering yourself.
Oh,
what,
centering
yourself? Centering, renewal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you know, I'm basically mainly in prayer constantly for any and everything, you know, before I try to do anything. That's basically my mood. Because I feel that, you know, as I try to call myself moving forward, I need assistance.
Right.
You know,
right.
Basically.
Walking meditation,
see,
just always.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We, from an astrological standpoint, have just entered into the full moon of Sagittarius. And in the ancient African Kemetic tradition, that is Nit. knit the warrior, the archer, the weaver. And so in this cycle, it is very much about, and I'm trying to, I have an awful lot of pictures on my Facebook page. I'm trying to find the picture of the post that I put up regarding the moon cycle. Where is it? I've got all these wonderful pictures that people shared with me about Ancestor Day. Here it is. Ancestor Day, which was marvelous. I mean, it was truly, truly beautiful in Coney Island, New York, in Brooklyn. But I found the post I'm looking for those of you who are on my Facebook page. You might have seen it. Just scroll down or just go to my pictures. You'll see it says Ankin Ma'at. That'll pull you in. And it was a honeymoon. Honey moon, yes. A honey-colored moon. But just to give you some information about the energy of Nit, which directly correlates with Sagittarius. She was the mother of the gods, wearer of the Jeshurun crown or the red crown, warrior, divine archer, weaver, connector. Sagittarians, I find, are really great at connecting with people. You know, they're very honest, but they're really great at connecting with people. Reveal. Oh, isn't that your sign, Sajette?
It's actually my moon sign. I'm a moon sign Sagittarius, rising Capricorn, and then I'm Cancer sun sign.
Okay,
all right. Yeah, so I was wondering. I was like, well, I don't know how the Sagittarius moon sign would be affected in a Sagittarius moon. I was like, am I going to go crazy?
Right. Because your moon sign is about how you express yourself in the world, you know?
Right.
Right. And so, you know, this is through basically straight talk, real talk. That's Sagittarius, okay?
Right.
Revealer of truth, mother of Sebek, mother of ethers, mother of waters, self-created. She's a self-created goddess. And also the opener of light. So the full moon in Sagittarius in the Kemetic language is Iyekmech Ujat Ibit Emnit. And the Hekau or mantra for this cycle is Ankin Ma'at, live in truth. Live in truth. And you were talking about your moon sign being in Sagittarius. And so for someone with a moon in Sagittarius, it's difficult for you all to understand why people can't be honest.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So why they can't be honest?
Yeah, why they can't be honest.
Why
they
not be honest, yeah, because the fact that Sagittarians, listen, it's very seldom that I've come across any shifty Sagittarians. Usually what you see is what you get, you know, and they don't care. You know, or leave me, this is it, I'm unapologetic, this is me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For an example,
the truth thing, like why you can't, why we can't understand why somebody wouldn't say tell the truth. Like a lot of times if I ask someone something and they say, I guess, well, I don't understand why they can't just say, nah, I'd rather not. You know, I don't have a problem with no. So just tell me as opposed to, So that's kind of an example of, like, I would prefer just straight truth. If you hate me, just let me know you hate me. Then, you know, that's great. Or, you know, just give me the truth. I don't have a problem. I have a problem when I feel like I'm not getting the truth. That's very true. Mm-hmm.
Understood. Okay, as I have posted here, this full honey moon in Nit or Sagittarius with Mercury in retrograde, because y'all know we're in a retrograde cycle. That's why we're the teacher here right now. And so it it's retrograde in Kepra, which is Cancer, which means falsehoods and bad intentions will be unwoven and rolled out for public display. Guard your tongue. Sweetly speak and live truth. Phony images will be called out. Do not battle truth. Make peace with it, better or worse. Open yourself to receiving light. Now, Sister Soil, let me ask you this. Do you do any particular cleansing baths on full moons? Sister Soil, where'd you go? Soil? What's that? Okay. Well, I know I generally I have my full moon rituals, and usually I gather water.
I'm here. No, I'm here. Now, ask me that again. I was trying to push the button.
Were you on mute?
Oh, no.
Were you on mute?
She was on mute, yeah.
Materially, okay. Disposed. All right. So I was asking if you find yourself doing any special spiritual baths on full moons, or if there are any that you can recommend for the moon cycles.
It just depends. Do anyone you want to, but I usually do a Yamaya bath, or right now I'm doing a Puri bath. But the Yamaya bath is you get seashells. You're going to use lavender and rosemary, your favorite type of bubbles or whatever, some slices of lemon. Your favorite essential oil, you know, make sure it's better if it's a natural oil. If not, baby oil or do or something like that. Some music and a white candle for yourself. And you can add rosemary herbs, you know. You don't have to necessarily do the oils. And that's one that I would recommend for like a full moon. Or you can do a purity bath. The purity bath, you'll need evaporated milk, blue food coloring, coconut oil, and just some yellow flowers, and you bathe with the sea salt. With the Yamaya bath, you bathe with the seashells. Do that. The Yamaya bath is for like 7 days, and you can just dispose of those seashells after you're finished washing with them. You just wash with these spiritual baths. You don't really use soap. And with the purification bath, you wash off with the sea salt. All of the sea salt does, it just really pulls out the toxins in your body. If you can't do sea salt, you can substitute it for herbs, especially if you have high blood pressure.
Right.
But I would recommend both of those baths. Or, not even that, make up your own bath. It makes it even much more funner. Just go off what you feel, because really this will guide you when you go to the store. Sometimes I just go to the 99-cent store and I get, and a niece. You need a niece, too, for these baths. I just find herbs and pick them up, go home and Google them and find out that it's good for some type of bath that goes to one of the gods or goddesses. But the odd things could be found in the 99-cent store.
I know. You always go to the 99-cent store and spend $99.
You can get Florida water in the 99-cent store. I'm telling you, I've stocked up on it. And so, Sister Soil, if you can just do me a favor, because I know that there, even though you're encouraging people to go by how they're guided, which is wonderful, I'm sure there are folks who might not be quite so sure how to move forward in this. And so how can people reach out to you through Spiritual Ascensions?
You can either contact me on my website, spiritualascensions.com, or on my fan page, Spiritual Ascensions, or get in contact with me at spiritualascensions@outlook.com. Or you can check my article on Renegade Wise Woman. I have a new one up this week. Sorry, Queen Mother.
It's for it. Okay. As soon as you get it to me, I'll post it. And
Either people can call and text me. It's listed on my website as well.
Okay, wonderful. Sister Karen, how can people reach out to you?
Oh, they can contact me at my email, mothercares, mothercares at AOL.com, and they can continue to read my articles at renegadewisewoman.com, and at thelatest.org.
And Southern Sachet, how can people reach out to you?
Yes, of course, facebook.com/SouthernSachet altogether, SouthernSachet@gmail altogether, and SouthernSachet.com.
Okay, we've got.
I will also have articles on Renegade Wise Woman as well.
What's your Facebook page again? I'm sorry.
Excuse me?
Facebook is yes. Southern Sachet, just / Southern Sachet.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's S-E-S-H-E-T.
Okay.
Yeah, that spelling is very important because
yes.
Most people are used to seeing it S-E-S-H-A-T. Yours is
yes.
S-E-S-H-E-T. Southern Sachet.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, I want to thank our guest, Delisa McEachin, for sharing her wonderful information regarding her career and the motivational words that she left for all of us. And, sisters, as usual, I am very grateful for you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. We're grateful for you.
Yes, we are.
Oh, well, you know what? Let me do my shout-out, okay? For those of you who want to reach out to me, somehow I never mentioned my website. Go to queenmotherimaku.info. queenmotherimaku.info. If you want to learn more about Kemetic culture, you can go to Akeru Kemetic Temple. That's AKERUKHAMETIC.
It's getting late.
Yes. AKERUKHAMETIC temple.info. And, of course, visit our Renegade Wise Woman site for more articles and for more information on being able to make positive change in your life. Take a chance, step outside of the box, color outside the lines, be a little different, be the change in your world. I am Queen Mother Imaku. It has been a pleasure again to be with you. Join us next week on Renegade Wise Woman for, you know what, I don't even, where's my,
We might have lost her. You there, Sis Karen?
Yeah, I'm still here. Hi. We lost Queen Mother. Yeah.
We lost Queen Mother.